Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastama Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 80.
Can I ask a question from the other class?
Yeah, on this. Okay.
So in the other class, you mentioned how the Rama is the independent.
Yes.
And that's what makes
the Brahman
a one thing.
No, it's just an aspect. It's a natural aspect of it. Yes.
So, and you used Chanakya Pandit as an example, like he could just live in a grass hut and he didn't rely on the donations of the king.
Yes.
So, my question is to do with, like, female Brahman. So, because of the dependent nature of women, like even those women that I know that are in the ministry, they still I think would have trouble living in it.
No, but they're dependent on other Brahmins.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
The point is the Brahmins are complete within themselves.
Yeah.
See, is that the Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra will have a tendency to be have more desire, need within the environment of you know, dharma, artha, and kama, while the Brahmins won't. Right? So their focus will be more on that elevation. So the simpler lifestyle, these and that, they have a tendency they can live that. Not that they can't live a fancier lifestyle, because for them it's all connected to Krishna, but they're not going to endeavor for it.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, if in the performance of their duties they don't have much, they can live with that. If in the same performance of the duties they end up with so much, then they'll engage that. It's not a problem for them. But you generally see the others, they would rather have more, so they'll tend to try to work and try to gain that more. That will be a difference. So that's why they tend to live that simpler kind of lifestyle. But even if they have a lot of facility, it's still simple because it's all connected to Krishna.
I understand that Brahmini Kinkar women have lesser needs than the other varnas, definitely, that's it. But I still don't see that they could ever be as independent as a man could, as a Brahmin.
But why do they need to be? Because they're connected with the Brahminical men.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that. So, because generally speaking also in the Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra, the men will always be connected with women. It's the Brahmins that they may get married or not, and they'll work either way. But the other ones will always generally do better if they are married. You know, occasionally you have those who are not, but it's more an exception. You know what I'm saying? But Brahmins not being married, then that's more less of an exception. Yeah. The Brahmin women are always connected with Brahmin men, so what's the problem? They're somehow or another connected with Brahmin men. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Prahlad Maharaj thought, "These two lowest of Brahmanas are not my gurus. I have learnt only bhakti from Sri Narada alone. I will speak about bhakti only." Sardartha Darshani 7:5, 23-24. Right, so he's not even considering them his gurus. Technically, they are because they're teaching mundane subject matter, but that just puts in the position of an upadhyaya. So an upadhyaya is not actually as elevated as a teacher, right? The teacher who teaches you the hidden meanings and things, the deepness of things, the depth, you know, what is actually meant by the Vedas, that is then considered properly. You know, you would say that's a full teacher. That's the spiritual master, right? So like this, as upadhyaya is there to be respected, and he does deal with them, but he won't when he considers guru, he considers spiritual master. So even though they're Brahmins and teaching, they're not a spiritual master. They're upadhyayas who are teaching in the mundane, you know, occupational duties. So when you're looking for what's the best is within bhakti, so they're not contributing to that aspect. Does that make sense? But he doesn't disrespect them. He deals with them properly. Prahlad Maharaj said, hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu, remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming his servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto him, in other words, serving him with the body, mind, and words. These 9 processes are accepted as pure devotional service. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these 9 methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. 23-24. Okay, footnote 20. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns these verses, 23 and 24, to Bhagavad Arkamichimala, chapter 12, entitled Devotional Service and Practice, Sadhana Bhakti, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. Additionally, you know, so in other words, these are the 9 processes of devotion. So naturally, they'll be in the Abhideya section. Because in one form, we can say is these 9, these are what devotional service is all expanded from this. Right? In another form, Lord Chaitanya gives the 5. And then everything is included in that. Right? Hearing, chanting, remembering. So that will get all your hearing, chanting here. Then, does that make sense? Most of the other things will all fall within deity worship. Like that. Padasevanam, Arshanam, Bandhanam, like those can all fall within that. So all these 9 are within the 5. So you see is what, when he explains that there's 2 lists, when he explains it in Chaitanya Charitamrita, then the 9 processes are there. But when Rupa Goswami then gives the 64, they're already included in the 5. Like that. And you see most of the other of the 64, other than the first 10, they're all about deity worship. Mm-hmm. Like that. Right. Yes.
Can we say that 64 is more or less the elaborate one? Then the 9 would be also a little less elaborate, and then 5 would be the condensed?
Yes. Yes, we could say. Like that. But the point is these 9 are processes that will be used, right? So, because you could hear and chant, but maybe you're not, you know, focus on remembering. So someone's focusing on hearing, someone's on chanting, someone's like this. So that way it has its uniqueness. But as far as engaging oneself, you could say, yes, the 5 are the essential, because those are direct activities. These 9 also are, you know, how they're defined are also direct. When you get into the 64, then they're also, but they connect with it through those 9 or through those 5. So you could say that, I guess. Additionally, in his Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 217, while discussing the 3 types of bhakti, Aropya Siddhi, no connection to devotional service but fruit offered, Sangha Siddhi, connected to devotional service, and Sarupa Siddhi, direct devotional service. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that, quote, these activities are different from the activities of Aropya Siddhi, Siddha Bhakti, devotional service. Even if one is bewildered, foolish, or has a host of shortcomings, and even if one merely imitates the activities of devotional service, by performing these activities, By performance of these activities, the 9 processes of devotional service, he comes into contact with Sarup Siddhi, devotional service, and attains the result of that service. Right?
This is first, Arop Siddhi. No connection to devotional service, but fruit culture.
Means it's just like you're going to your work and it's just your work. But then you're going to take some of that money and use it in devotional service.
Oh, that's the majority.
Yes. But now, what did Prabhupada offer us?
Huh?
What did Prabhupada offer?
What
is the Sarup Siddhi.
Yes.
Right?
And wait a minute. But what would be the difference between Aropa and Sangha Siddha? Because it's connected to...
It's connected to devotional service. In other words, you're doing devotional service, but it might be mixed. Like you're doing some devotional service, but you're not necessarily... the mentality may not be so much there, that would be too confusing. You're performing, let's say you're going to work, you see how it's connected to Krishna, right? And then it's doing like that. So in other words, the aropya is you're using indirect activities, but not connecting the activity to Krishna, just connecting the result. The Sangha, you would be using indirect activities, but you're connecting them. Right? Swarup would mean their direct devotional service. You see things in connection with it direct. You're focusing on that.
Can we say, for example, if we chant, which is direct activity,
yes,
but we are inattentive,
then it just means it's not the quality of the Swarup. You know, within Swarup, then there'll be levels also.
Okay. So the second one would not be direct devotional service, it would be just our connection in the mind that we can make it.
Yes. So that's the whole point. So we see is that they're different in how they're connected. So we have to see is that directly devotional service and then connected would be a superior, no connection, but the fruit is offered, that would be the lowest. So one should not make a philosophy of using aropya and then claim that it's just as good as the others. Right, because if you do that, what would be the basis other than false ego? Right? Like that. Okay. So when we get to the Bhakti Sandarbha, then we'll get into the finer details of this. Like that. So that's probably Bhakti, and then... Yeah, that would be the fifth, right? I think that you have four on Sambandha, one on Abhideya, and one on Prayojana. So this would be year after next we get to this, when we're doing 11th Canto. So all the analysis will come out there. Okay. Srila Prabhupada gives a thorough analysis of the Navalakshana, beginning with a quick overview by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Oh, okay.
What's Navalakshana?
Navalakshana means the nine symptoms nine ornaments of devotional service. That means the Shravana, Kirtana, Smarana, Bandana. Okay. Wow.
I think this is the longest purport in Bhagavatam.
In Bhagavatam. Yeah, well, it's very important. Okay, so. Okay, serious. Okay. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the following explanation in his Tatya. The word Shravana refers to giving oral reception to the holy name and descriptions of the Lord's form, qualities, entourage, and pastimes, as explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and similar authorized scriptures. After orally receiving such messages, one should memorize these vibrations and repeat them, kirtanam. Smaranam means trying to understand more and more about the Supreme Lord. Right? Because it was saying about meditating upon the Lord. Jigyasa meant meditating on the Lord. So that means that's also jigyasa means inquiring. How do you meditate unless you're inquiring? You heard, so then you chant. But to remember, you have to be wanting to know. Right? Is that what it means? Yes.
All three go together.
Yes, all three go together. But the point is that it's in its own category, because you could say hearing and chanting would mean, but when you want to know, then you'll naturally inquire, so then you'll be meditating upon that, therefore you're remembering. So that desire to know more about the Lord, know more about the Bhagavatam, then that will be smarana. Right? Yes.
So they naturally nourish one another.
Yes, yes. They all naturally nourish. So it's like you're going to hear and chant, but if there's actually that kind of commitment to the process, that'll generate smarana. Like that. Because otherwise you could hear and chant and maybe not be so focused. You know, like that. But when you want to know, then you'll pay more attention, you'll meditate on it, so it'll go into manana. So basically, in Shravanam, you know, you can have kirtanam. When you get to manana, that's where remembrance is.
Yeah.
And then when you get to the last one, when you get to then you'll get that Shakyamatmani Vedana. In Nididhyasana. Okay. And Padasevana means engaging oneself in serving the lotus feet of the Lord according to the time and circumstances. Archana means worshipping Lord Vishnu as one does in the temple. And Vandanam means offering respectful obeisances. Manmanabhava madbhakto madhyajimam namaskuru. Bhagavad Gita 18:65. Vandanam means namaskuru, offering obeisances or offering prayers. So it's also the offering obeisances is part of that. It's not just, you know, that you're offering prayers, that you're offering obeisances to the deities, and that's also part of this vandanam. Thinking oneself to be Nitya Krishna Das, everlastingly a servant of Krishna, is called Dasyam. And Sakyam means being a well-wisher of Krishna. So Dasya means you identify as Krishna's service, and therefore you're always engaged in his service. That will be there. Sometimes it'll be defined as Dasya means engaging yourself in the activities of Varnashram connected to Krishna. But we don't define it that way, because we're not taking that Varnashram as an Anga of Bhakti in this case. We're taking it that would be the natural culture, how you'd situate yourself in the Brahminical culture. But that itself is not specifically devotional service. Connecting it to Krishna, then you see yourself as servant, so therefore everything you're doing within the Varnashram system, you're seeing it connected to Krishna. And that's the part that makes it dasyam. Does that make sense? So we don't really count the Varnashram side like that. But that's just the natural thing that one does. Right? Yeah. Okay. And Sakya means being a well-wisher of Krishna. Krishna wants everyone to surrender to him because everyone is constitutionally his servant. Therefore, as a sincere friend of Krishna, one should preach this philosophy, requesting everyone to surrender unto Krishna. Right? So preaching, the preacher, that means when you're preaching Krishna consciousness, trying to forward the mission, that's Sakya. Right? That's the meaning. Not, you know, you're out there with a lunch bag with Krishna and trading, you know, lotteries or something. You know, that's not what it means. Yeah? So, somehow or another, trying to do something within the society of devotees to push forward the mission. So either you're directly preaching or assisting those who are, or some way doing something, that's sakya. Right? Atmanivedana means offering Krishna everything, including one's body, mind, intelligence, and whatever one may possess. Right? Because body, mind, and words, that will be yourself. Then that you know, that identification has facilities. So body, mind, and words, along with the facilities you have, you'll offer that to Krishna. Yes?
I'm just having an idea that when I come to Krishna consciousness, whatever I possess, I should... put on fire and then forget about it, and then my whole life didn't exist anymore. And now I'm starting from fresh start, fresh paper, and then. But then, would that mean that they're not engaging there?
Not necessarily. I mean, it has to see is what they had before. Is it useful in Krishna consciousness? Will they be able to be Krishna conscious? So sometimes, by a fresh start, then they see it in a new light. Mm-hmm. So. But at the same time, it should be that if they can do that fresh start, they should be able to maintain that fresh start. It shouldn't be that having given all that, then afterwards they wonder, why did I do that?
Yeah.
You know, because then that was sentimental. So the point is you have facilities, use it for Krishna. But if you don't actually need that, then you do whatever you like. But the point is it's still getting rid of it is still being done in a way that is responsible, so it's engaged in Krishna service. So if you find that, okay, you had so much stuff, you don't actually need it because of the materialistic concept. Now that you're Krishna conscious, you see you don't need it. So then what you don't require for your day-to-day life, that you can then distribute in some way. You know what I'm saying? But you have to be responsible.
That would also include like knowledge, skills, experience.
The knowledge you know is not very important.
Yeah.
You know, you got a degree in underwater basket weaving from Reed College. Maybe you will not pursue that. You know, like that. Never? It's actually a course.
It is?
Yeah. They have a certain time of the year when they have this festival. And then all these kind of courses they run, like that. But it's still going on. My mother used to talk about underwater basketball eating, and it still goes on today. So.
Popular.
Yes.
How one comes to surrendering intelligence to Krishna?
Surrendering intelligence. That means engaging the senses in the Lord's service. When you say body, mind, words, that means intelligence, that means the senses. So they're all the same thing. It's just that of the senses, the words, if you surrender the words, then generally everything else follows. What you talk about is generally where your focus is, your endeavor is.
So in time to time, when we talk only about Krishna and remove everything else, we purify our intelligence, and that's the Atman Brahman state.
No, yes. The point is that all your senses are engaged in the Lord's service. That's the meaning of intelligence. Because the intelligence is the Lord of the senses. Does that make sense? Okay. One's sincere endeavor to perform these nine processes of devotional service is technically called bhakti. The word adha means directly. One should not be like the karmis who perform pious activities and then formally offer the results to Krishna. That is karmakanda. One should not aspire for the results of his pious activities, but should dedicate oneself fully and then act piously. Right? So you're dedicating yourself, then acting with impiety. Because if you're going to dedicate yourself and perform activities, then the recommended are pious, not impious activities. So you're dedicating yourself to Krishna, then engaging in pious activities for Krishna's pleasure. Right? That's the sarvadharmam paritya, right? Because the pious activities is dharma. So you're giving up dharma because of the benefits it gives and just surrendering to Krishna, so you're doing service. Then you're engaging the pious activities, right? We discussed this previously. No?
Yeah, so it means we put devotional service at the first place and then everything follows that.
Yes, that's it. If we start with everything and then go there, then we see that's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
That would be what we say is the sangha, or connected. So, it's good, but it's not as good as at it started with devotional service, then went to piety. Right? The lowest is, it's piety, you want the results of the piety, and then you'll give to Krishna. Okay? Like that. So that's the... Okay. One should act for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu, not for the satisfaction of his own senses. That is the meaning of the word adha, directly. Anya vilashita shunyam jnana karma jnavritam anakulyena krishnanu shilanam paktir uttama. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 19.167. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruit of activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service, right? So if you're interested in karma and jnana as benefits, that will be mixed devotional service, not pure. Right? So that would be basically your second stage. Right? The sangha, because you're associating with devotees and all that. The direct means you're actually, it's properly connected. Pure devotional service is properly connected.
Right?
Right. Yes.
It appears that this endeavor, it's not an prayojana, But in Abhideya section, when we perform, then just subconsciously we desire some results.
Yes.
For ourselves.
Right.
So in Prayojana, there's Krishna.
Yes.
But then in Abhideya, we have some mixture.
Mixed. No, but then, because that means that our Prayojana has a touch of a little bit of mix also.
Okay.
Like that. Because what you do in Abhideya will generate results in Prayojana. So I perform an activity, it will generate a result. But the reason for that result is to please Krishna.
Yes.
Right? So if there's an element I want to please myself also in there, then that means then that external result that I've gotten to offer to Krishna, I also want part of that.
Yes.
So that would be mixed.
Okay.
Like that. Because the activity itself doesn't necessarily change, nor does the knowledge. Right? It means that you have the mechanics of the activity all the way through.
Yeah.
Like that. Then you have the consciousness that's used and all that. That's then on layered on top of that. Because that decides where it will go.
Right.
Like that. Mm-hmm.
So it's not pure unalloyed, actually.
Yes.
Neither in Prayojana nor in Abhideya.
No. But the point is it's beneficial because it's connected to devotional service, connected to Krishna. So if one has the, if we're associating with those that are on that platform of pure and alloyed, then even though we may not be, we'll slowly get there. Mm-hmm. You know, like here, we're hearing from Prabhupada, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Paladeva, all the different acharyas. And so then we're associating with those that are on that platform. So then we hear the actual position. Otherwise, just like now we mentioned that point about that difference, you know, of the how you say, the devotional service first, then the piety, and then this and that. And there's kind of a what do you call it? Yeah, I think we've kind of touched on that topic. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that it's these things go away very easily, because this is where the difficulty is.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But because we keep hearing about it, because of our association with these great personalities, gradually we start to see how important this is. Like always before, it would be, yes, of course you have to have guru, but now let's talk about devotional service. But then we see is that here, as we're going through more and more, the Bhagavatam is bringing that out, and the Vedanta Sutra is bringing out, no, it's all about surrender to guru. If that's there, then the rest of it will go. But it's not just that I surrendered, then that's it. No, that's the first stage of then the whole thing. So you have to have a balance there, because also sometimes the neophyte thinks, I have a guru, so therefore everything's perfect. You know? Or it's like, oh, we have all these other things, and that makes it perfect. No, it's because you're performing activities under the direction of the guru, that will make it perfect. Yeah. So, you know, so that's the whole point of Sangha, is that we're always associating, so we always hear, and in this way, then slowly it starts to, you know, to become a reality. Yeah? Yeah. So,
in this connection, can you say that there's a difference between I have a guru, I serve the guru, and I'm surrendering?
Yeah, you could, but they should technically all be the same thing. Yeah. So the point is there are all these different aspects are there, so that you understand you know, it's just a matter of looking at Sambandhavide and Prayojana. You know, it's just a matter of that if it's all together, then that works nice, you know. So, yes.
But there's always a question, which is more important, Shravanam or Kirtan?
But unless you heard, how do you speak? You know what I'm saying? It's just like that. Let's say I have a jug. Jug. Now, I put something in that pitcher, then what can I do? Yes. I don't put anything in the pitcher, can I pour anything? Yeah. So that's the point, the two go together. That's the doubt comes up because there's this modern thing is, no, you have to draw it out, you have to that, and no, it's all there and everything like that. But the point is what's put in is what you can take out. Does that make sense?
The inherent nature of this soul to be servant and be connected to Krishna, that's inherent. But all these other aspects to know about Krishna and all that, we're tatastha. So it's not that we know about Krishna. There's a generic understanding of that there's a higher, that we are there, there must be a source. Right? And so that source will be the cause of whatever's benefit. So if we're Satchitananda, we have to come from Satchitananda. So connection with that principle will be our natural position and natural benefit. But the details of this Satchitananda, that's not known. That we gain from those who do know. So when that's put in, that can be drawn out. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just like, that's the thing. The Hajjas only do kirtan. Where's the Shravana? You know, or the pandits, they just do Shravanam, they don't do kirtanam. So you have to have both together. So, yeah.
It's very interesting in the teaching of Mahaprabhu to Rupa Goswami. He mentions the nine processes, and then he gives the conclusion that you know, among them, the Nama Sankirtan, that's what will give you the friend. That's the famous verse. Dharamaja Sarva Shesha Nama Sankirtan.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's all there.
Yeah.
So it's one follows the other.
Yes. If you have those two, you'll get everything else. Like that. But the point is they in themselves can be complete.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. That's what he says.
Yeah.
And then the next one is
about the other five.
Yeah.
For the other seven.
No. He mentions the nine.
Oh. Okay.
And then he says that the Nama Sankirtan will give you prema if you chant offenses.
Okay. Very good. Yes.
Out of the nine, can we just follow one or two?
You can. Yes. Yes. That's all. That's all explained. Yes. Different devotees have become perfect by following, you know, one of them, like that. So that's possible. But as it says, the most effective is Shravanam Kirtanam, because they'll all be hearing and chanting. They just focus on a particular one. That's all. Okay. One should simply satisfy Krishna without being influenced by fruit of knowledge or fruit of activity. Okay, so interesting here, probably calls it fruit of knowledge and fruit of activity, because we'll generally say, you know, there's fruit of activity, then there's jnana, you know. But it's actually just, one you're trying to get fruit from your activity, the other you're trying to get fruit from your knowledge. But they're both fruit of it. So devotional service means it's non-fruitive. That's the... In other words, work performed simply for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord without any desire for material benefits is called bhakti. Bhakti is also called nishkarma, or freedom from the results of fruit of activity. Bhakti and nishkarma are on the same platform, although devotional service and fruit of activity appear almost the same. So, what you do in bhakti and what you do in fruit of activity, the activities will basically look the same, because they're both using pious activities. But one is using the pious activity to get the benefit of the pious activity. The other one is you're using the pious activity as a medium to serve Krishna. Right? Bhakti is called nishkarma because you give up this fruit of activity. Now, the impersonalists consider they're doing nishkarma. But actually, they're not. They're using the form of nishkarma, but it's still fruitive, because they want the benefit of jnana. So even though it looks similar, it's still not. So only the devotee is actually nishkarma, right? Because they're not looking for the fruit of knowledge or the fruitive, activities. So, The nine different processes enunciated by Prahlad Maharaj, who learned them from Narad Muni, may not all be required for the execution of devotional service. If a devotee performs only one of these nine without deviation, he can attain the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes it is found that when one performs one of the nine processes, other processes are mixed with it. That is not improper for a devotee. When a devotee executes any one of the nine processes, Navalakshana, this is sufficient. The other eight processes are included. Now let us discuss these nine different processes. Right? So if you're focusing on one of them, the other nine will be there anyway. The other eight will be there anyway. So you don't have to worry that it has to be only that without anything else. But if you're focusing on one of them, then you would pay attention to following everything properly within that. But just like for us, okay, bandhanam means we're offering prayers, okay, we're offering obeisances and things like that. And so that's already included in our whatever process we're doing, our hearing and chanting. But now if you want to focus specifically on bandhana, I think as Prabhupada will mention here, then you have to pay attention to the rules. You always have to offer the prayers from the deity's right side. You always have, the way you're dressing, you can't be wearing sewn cloth. All these different things have to be there. Then you can say you're perfecting devotional service through that particular one. But it's going to be hearing, chanting, remembering, so all these things will be there. Does that make sense? So that's why we say somebody's become perfect by the one, because they focus on that, but the others are there. Okay. One, Shravanam. Hearing of the holy name of the Lord, Shravanam, is the beginning of devotional service. Although any one of the nine processes is sufficient, in chronological order, the hearing of the holy name of the Lord is the beginning. Indeed, it is essential. As enunciated by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Cheto Darpan Marjanam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antyalila, 2012. By chanting the holy name of the Lord, one is cleansed of the material conception of life, which is due to the dirty modes of material nature. That's funny. The dirty modes of material nature.
That's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati?
No, this is Prabhupada. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that I know of.
It says there in the beginning. That's Prabhupada edition.
Yeah.
Here. We cover your question about this.
Yeah, so whether it's all the way up to just what we just heard here, or whether I kind of get the idea is that that first paragraph is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because he goes through all nine of them there. Then Prabhupada starts to give the samanya aspects, just how the position of devotional service and everything like that. Then he'll get into the specifics. I would think that from one sincere endeavor to perform these is Prabhupada. Because that's just the way you work. You have the general, you're giving the essential points so you know what you're talking about. Then you give the general points. Then you get into detail. So there's three levels of study of something, like that. So much of the time in the Western Padati, they'll consider that it's an overlap, so why do that? But actually, you give an overview so you know what you're going to deal with. Then you give the general approach to the whole thing. Then you get into specifics, right? So that's just the standard way. You see, the way the Vedas do. That's very standard. Like that. So Rupa Goswami's is no different. Right? By chanting the holy name of the Lord, one is cleansed of the material concept of life, which is due to the dirty modes of material nature. When the dirt is cleansed from the core of one's heart, one can realize the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha. Brahma Samhita 5.1. Thus, by hearing the holy name of the Lord, one comes to the platform of understanding the personal form of the Lord. Right? Because from name comes form. So by absorbing yourself in the name nicely, then the form will come up. Right? Because sometimes the devotees say, well, I'm chanting, I can't picture the form of the Lord. That's because at that stage we should be focusing on hearing. And when that develops, then form will come naturally. Then from form, qualities, and pastimes. right? Then it would just keep going. You know, the dham, the paraphernalia, the associates, all that will all come. So that's why one doesn't have to. It's not a sadhana of chanting to be remembering about some pastime or something. Right? It's just that will come with time anyway. So, some sense. Yes.
So, is it a different sadhana? Means smaranam is some time for that, and then chanting it happens in separate time.
No. Well, here by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's definition, smaranam means the desire to know. So when you have that desire, that's where you'll start remembering. So by hearing and chanting, you know, in that process, then eventually that remembrance will come. Because manana, by repetition, by practice, by application, then you start to remember. You start, you know, you understand, you start to remember, you're able to practice, you get benefit. So it's not a separate thing, it'll just come with the natural time, that's what he's saying here. Just by practicing Shravanam, then with time, then these things will happen. So the process of Smaranam is not different than Shravanam Kirtanam.
It's one process.
It's one process. It's just that what stage you're at. Just like you perform Karma Yoga, it will bring you to Jnana Yoga. Because karma will produce knowledge and detachment. So that will naturally bring you to Jnana Yoga. So it's just a natural... But same time, you can tell the difference. So Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, you can tell the difference, but at the same time, they're one process. Mm-hmm. Okay. Hearing from the text of Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the most important process of hearing. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of transcendental chanting of the holy name, and therefore the chanting and hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendentally full of mellows. The transcendental holy name of Krishna may be heard and chanted according to the attraction of the devotee. One may chant the holy name of the Lord Krishna, or one may chant the holy name of Lord Rama, or Nrisingadev, Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtan, Brahma Samhita 539. The Lord has innumerable forms and names, and devotees may meditate upon a particular form and chant the holy name according to his attraction. The best course is to hear of the holy name, form, and so on from a pure devotee of the same standard as oneself. Right, so the same standard means whatever it is your particular interest, hearing from that devotee, that would be the most effective. Does that make sense? So, if you're interested in Braja Bhakti, you hear from those from that path of Braja Bhakti. That will be the most effective. Okay. In this connection, Sridhar Swami has remarked that a pure devotee takes advantage of another pure devotee by trying to hear from him about the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord. If there is no such opportunity, he alone chants and hears the Lord's holy name. So, one is always hearing and chanting, but if there's an opportunity to hear more, one takes advantage of that. So that's the... Two, Kirtanam. The hearing of the holy name has been described above. Now let us try to understand the chanting of the holy name, which is the second item in the consecutive order. It is recommended that such chanting be performed very loudly. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Narad Muni says that without shame, he began traveling all over the world, chanting the holy name of the Lord. Similarly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has advised, Trinad api sunichena, tarod api sahishnuna, amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, 17:31. A devotee can very peacefully chant the holy name of the Lord by behaving more humbly than the grass, being tolerant like the tree, like a tree, and offering respects to everyone without expecting honor from anyone else. Such qualifications make it easier to chant the holy name of the Lord. The process of chanting means you cannot have those and chant and it'll still be effective. But as you start to develop these, as you once purified, then the chanting process goes easier. Because then there's nothing to gain. Because otherwise, if you're not humble, why? Because there's something to gain. You're not tolerant because either because you're not gaining something. Right? You're respecting others because you'll get something from that. You want respect because that's a benefit. Does that make sense? So as these reduce, then there's nothing that you're trying to gain from the devotional process. So that makes the process so much easier. Such qualifications make it easier to chant the holy name of the Lord. The process of transcendental chanting can be easily performed by anyone, even if one is physically unfit, classified lower than others, devoid of material qualifications, or not at all elevated in terms of pious activities. The chanting of the holy name is beneficial. So that means that's the real point, the focus on the hearing and chanting the holy name of the Lord. That's actually the main thing, because that's what's universal to everybody. Otherwise, if we try to regionalize with some particular thing and say, oh, this culture is the world culture, then the problem comes is that we'll have a difficulty. So the real thing is the hearing and chanting. Right? That's the actual point that makes that's what everybody can do. And so that way, then there may be a difference in how different individuals are practicing. But the hearing and chanting is where they can all focus together. So let me see. Yes.
So when you have a Gautami practice, you know that even though it's listed as hearing and then chanting, but chanting is taken to be more prominent because to hear you need to find a qualified speaker. But to chant you don't need any prerequisite or
that's there, but the point is you've heard the holy name from someone who's chanted it. So it that's why it's the next you heard, then you can chant. But the point is even if you've only heard once, you can go on chanting for the rest of your life. Now, if you have an opportunity to hear more, you'll take it. But if you don't, as Sri Goswami says, then you'll just sit down and chant yourself. But if you have the opportunity, why you would not take it? But that's not right. It is understood from the authoritative source of Vedic literature that especially in this age, Kali Yuga, people are generally short-living, extremely bad in their habits, and are inclined to accept methods of devotional service that are not bona fide. Moreover, they are always disturbed by material conditions, and they are mostly unfortunate.
This is like a translation of the Bhagavatam verse.
It's also inclined to accept methods of devotional service that are not bona fide. So we make up our own. So that was what I was meaning before. We can't make up our own. We have to stick to the process that the chanting is the main. We can't put the emphasis on something else. No, by the management, that will be the main, or the economics, so that'll be the main, or other kinds of things. No, the hearing and chant, this is the main. If that's there, everything else will fall into place. Right? So we shouldn't make up our own. Okay. Moreover, they are always disturbed by material conditions, and they are mostly unfortunate. Under the circumstances, the performances of other processes, such as yajna, dana, tapa, and kriya, sacrifices, charity, and so on, are not at all possible. Therefore, it is recommended, Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalona Steven Steven Steva Gatiranyata, Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 1721. Right. So in this age of So means these other things, these are recommended processes just that are the culture that one follows. Right? Now, ideally you're surrendered to Krishna and then using these in his service. Right? Or if it's in the process of elevation, you're following them because they're recommended and the results are connected to Krishna. Right? But it's saying in the Kali Yuga, people are so unqualified, therefore they are not possible. So we should be very careful in looking at them, saying, oh yes, we don't need the holy name is higher. The holy name is higher, but we have to understand we're lower. You know, the thing is, oh, the holy name is higher, so I'm superior to these. No. We're inferior, that's why we can't do them. So that's why then we focus on the hearing and chanting, because that's what everybody can do. So that creates the humble position. Otherwise, the other one can create a position of pride. Like, I think one devotee was making some comment about Indian Brahmins. And Prabhupada corrected him, says, no, there's Brahmins in India, they're practicing, they're doing things nicely. Like that. You know, because it was kind of like, oh, we're devotees, so we're superior. Says devotional service is superior. But it's not that we're superior. That's the mistake. We have to be careful. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is chanting the holy name of the Lord. There's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way. Simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one advances perfectly in spiritual life. This is the best process for success in life. While chanting the holy name of the Lord, one should be careful to avoid 10 offenses. There's no way to atone for any of these offenses. It is therefore recommended that an offender at the feet of the holy name continue to chant the holy name 24 hours a day. Right, so the offenses of the holy name, there's no way to atone for it. These are not like the cruative activities that you perform in activity, then there's an atonement for them. The atonement doesn't get rid of the problem, it just sets you on a proper path. Right? And so during the time of that atonement, then the reactions for that are being cleared. But it's not that, you know, does that make sense? No, reactions are coming, but they're coming during the activity they're doing to atone. Like that. We have the idea, I'll do this and it won't come. No, they're coming anyway. But it puts one on the proper path. But for the holy name, there is no atone because it's the Lord. Right? Because the Lord being everything, you offend Him. What outside the Lord is there that you can do that, to atone for offending the Lord? So therefore, since that's the case, the only atonement is to continue chanting. So we shouldn't, in our chanting, be disturbed that it's not ideal and then give up the chanting. No, the only thing is that if the chanting's not going nicely, then, you know, continue. Yeah. That's the only thing you can do. In fact, it recommended here, do more. Because by doing more chanting, that will purify one more, and that will bring one to the proper platform. Yes.
Even if we have offenses, we continue to chant here.
What else are you going to do? What's your alternative?
We will receive a reaction for offenses that we make.
But what's the problem? You have the reactions anyway. So what are you going to do about it? You can't do anything about it. The only thing you can do is chant. Right? So don't focus on the reactions, focus on the chanting.
But the reactions are distracting when they happen.
But what's your alternative? How do you get rid of those distractions other than chanting?
Should make us then more determined.
Right? I mean, you can't go up and look on, what do you call it? On iTunes does not have an app to get rid of your offenses.
Not yet.
They're working on it.
They know where the chants are.
Do you understand?
Yes.
So the only way to get rid of the offenses is by chanting. So the only worry about offenses is that they're being committed, so therefore you focus on chanting. But if you're focusing on the offenses, how you'll get rid of them?
Yeah. Can we say that you commit offenses at secondary level, then you can take shelter of primary and then remove the offenses?
Yes, but offenses to primary, what's the shelter other than the primary? Yes, now, you understand that? You understand what you're saying?
I didn't
hear. Here, I see. Means secondary activities, there's an offense there, you take shelter of the primary, that will remove the reactions to the secondary. But if offense is in the primary, the only way to get rid of it is the primary. You can't turn to the secondary for it.
But Bhaktivinoda Thakur,
he makes an interesting point in Harinam Chintamani, which is connected to previous discussion. And he says from Nama Parat to next level, which is Nama Bas, you can progress on your own, but then from Nama Bas to Shudanam is not possible. You need a guru.
Yeah.
So this won't happen. You can't do it on your own.
Oh,
you
yes.
should receive the pure name from a devotee.
Okay. So that means then someone otherwise can get to that platform. Anybody could get to the platform, Nama Bas.
Yes.
Also, I think it's also mentioned is that in the same connection is that one can elevate oneself to
the muddying of platform by his performance of sadhana.
Yes.
You know, focus on that. But to get to the platform of bhava, that's only by Krishna's grace. So it'll be the same way, as the Shuddhanam will be by Krishna's grace. So if one's sincere in trying to chant nicely according to Guru, then that's your best, you know, that's how it will happen.
Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, nice.
Sometimes I'm not sure,
yes, because surrender to Guru means to following the instructions. That's what you mean before by the sentimentals. We say, I have a guru, and then we do whatever we like. That's what Prabhupada said. Guru's not a, a fad or pet, a pet. You know, that, you know, we have guru and this and that. You know, sometimes you have celebrities, they have a guru and stuff like that. And but it's not about, it's about themselves. That's the new thing, is to have a guru. Like that, you know, sometimes they have a tattoo, sometimes it's what you wear, sometimes what you drive, sometimes you're having a guru. Like this, you know, it just goes around. You know, you have a blog, you have a tweet, you know, like this. So that's not the point. It's following the instruction. That's what makes it. Okay? Yes?
You mentioned that Mahaprabhu says about, and with this, such qualifications make it easier to chant the beginning of the Lord.
Yes.
So, in this process, are the qualifications first been developed and then the pure chanting, or the pure chanting automatically develops these qualifications?
You're trying to do them both. It's not that you say, oh, I'm not going to worry about being humble or tolerant, because when I come to pure chanting, then I'll get it. Because unless there's the trying to know, how do you remember? How do you absorb yourself? The less I'm absorbed in Krishna, why will I do things for him? And I'm only absorbed if I want to, you know, it's important to me. You know what I'm saying? So, hearing the holy name from the bona fide source and trying to practice it in that way, doing our best, that's what will make things work. Is that right? Yeah. Okay. Constant chanting of the holy name will make one free of offenses, and then he will gradually be elevated to the transcendental platform on which he can chant the pure name and thus become a lover of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, so that's the whole point. That constant chanting, that will bring one to that platform of pure devotion, pure Shuddhanam. It is recommended that even if one commits offenses, one should continue chanting the holy name. In other words, the chanting of the holy name makes one offenseless. In the book Nama Kaumudi, it is recommended that if one is an offender at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, he should submit to that Vaishnava and be excused. Similarly, if one is an offender in chanting the holy name, he should submit to the holy name and thus be freed from his offenses. Smarana. After one regularly performs the processes of hearing and chanting, and after the core of one's heart is cleansed, smarana, remembering, is recommended. Because otherwise, if the heart is not pure, even you try to remember it, you'll naturally just go off into something else. Because remembering, what are you remembering? You're remembering the Lord, and what's that manifestation through? Right? It's through his energy. And so if the heart's not purified, for us, energy, we tend to take it into sense gratification. So when we try to remember the Lord's pastimes or aspects about the Lord, because it's through the medium of his energy, any point of that energy that we come across in the remembrance that reminds us of things that are still important to us on the material platform, immediately we're going over there. You understand? So that's why, as the heart becomes purified, so without Shravanam Kirtanam, you don't come to Smaranam. But if you do Shravanam Kirtanam, you'll naturally come there.
That was the question. So it means that we shouldn't push this next stage.
No, but it's not that we're lazy towards it. We're interested in it. So then, interested, we'd like to be able to remember the Lord rather than, you know, so many other things. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yes.
So, if we're, are you saying that if we're remembering the Lord's pastime, and then because we have desires and things, then we get distracted?
By some thread there.
Yeah,
something about the forest, and then we start thinking about the forest, and yeah, that was a great forest I was in over there, and all that, and then this one, and then that happened, but the mosquitoes were, you know, it's just, we're gone, it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the whole point. We're trying to practice it, but the point is it will come naturally as the heart becomes purified.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Without the distraction.
Without the distraction. Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's just like, let's say, if you're full, are you thinking about food? No, but if you're hungry, smarnam comes really easy. Yes.
We notice also that studying Srimad Bhagavatam is the easiest way to do smarnam.
Yeah. Because you're constantly hearing, and constantly so many things come up like that. And so then from that, then we remember. Because we want to know, we hear Bhagavatam, we want to know, therefore we remember. You know, it's just like, as we go through, now we, you know in this canto this is happening, that canto that's happening. Before you just knew they were stories in the Bhagavatam, you know, where they are, you know, it's not necessarily known. You know, so just with time more and more, it comes. You know, the fun part, now we're getting on this more advanced level, but we see it's taking us back to that. You know, the first verses. Mm-hmm. But now our understanding of them is much greater. Because we studied those verses, we didn't get that understanding. Mm-hmm. But now, hearing them later, we get a greater understanding. So the remembrance becomes more. Yeah, it's good. According to different relationships with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there are varieties of Namanukirtanam, chanting of the holy name, and thus according to different relationships and mellows are five kinds of remembering. These are as follows. A. Conducting research into the worship of a particular form of the Lord. B. Concentrating the mind on one subject and withdrawing the mind's activities of thinking, feeling, willing from all other subjects. C. Concentrating upon a particular form of the Lord. This is called meditation. Wow. These are the five levels of meditation. So Patanjali will describe these five. Bhav Sadhana has these five, but here it's being given a very full explanation. Because here it's Smriti Anu Smriti, you know, like this as we've been going through here. You know, the last fifth one will be Samadhi. Okay. C. Concentrating upon a particular form of the Lord. This is called meditation. D. Concentrating one's mind continuously on the form of the Lord. This is called Dhruvanu Smriti, or perfect meditation. And awakening a liking for concentration upon a particular form. This is called Samadhi, or trance. Right. So then we're hearing about Krishna and things like this. So we're starting to conducting research in the worship of a particular form of the Lord. So by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we're hearing about Krishna. As we see, the focus is always on Krishna. Even other devotees that are not Braja Bhakti, Bhaktas, they're all talking about Krishna. Prahlad Maharaj is talking about Krishna. Other prayers before this and the other cantos are talking about Krishna. Right? So then we're doing research into that aspect, right, of Krishna. Right? So then you're starting to look at this, though other things are being remembered, right? In the first stage. The second stage, then you're focusing on that, trying to withdraw it from the other. Right? Does that make sense? Then the third stage, then you're concentrating on a particular form. This is meditation. Like that. Then you're concentrating continuously. This is Dhruva and Smriti, a perfect meditation. Then you get to Samadhi. So like the yoga process takes you. So dharana means you'll be meditating. You know, jnana, that means then, you know, the Dhruvana Smriti is that it's continuous. And then Samadhi means then it's an awakening. The other is that you're focusing on it, but with Samadhi it's awakening. It just happens naturally. You don't not think of that form. Right? Somebody says, up to that stage there's a you have to try to think. But as you go, it becomes easier and easier. But when you come to the fifth stage of samadhi, then you just naturally think of that form. You don't have to not think of that form. Right? Yes.
Just concentrating one's mind. So it is the endeavor of the devotee to fix up the mind on a particular form. It is not naturally the form comes in front of
What do you mean by naturally?
Because as we said that nama rupa gunavida.
Yeah, but there's an interest. So that's why we're absorbed. See, basically speaking, the fundamental principles of this has all been done for us. Is we're being given Krishna in Vrindavan as the form. But then it has to be that we're interested in knowing about Krishna. Remember, you know, about Krishna. What does he look like? What is the form? How does he do things? How does he stand? You know what I'm saying? That's why then you see is that the scriptures always define the Lord when he comes for prayers, like Vishnu comes and meets the Pachetas, Vishnu comes and meets Daksha. Then his form is always described, right? So that means then we start to get an interest in that form. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, but then at some point, then it has to be, we give up other things. You know, we're worshiping Krishna and we're doing all our other stuff. But it has to be, we're worshiping Krishna and trying to give up the other stuff. Then when that other stuff's given up, that it's just Krishna that we're focused on, that's meditation. Right? Then when that becomes constant, then that's the Dhruvana Smriti. And then from Dhruvana Smriti goes to Samadhi, where it just naturally comes. Is that something that exists? So nowadays what people call meditation is simply just a research, you know, into, how you say, conducting a research into a particular formless something. So it's not actually getting anywhere. You know, it's not meditation. It's just preliminary stages, and it only actually becomes real when there's a person. Because in Patanjali, then you meditate on Super Soul. So there has to be, you know, a particular form.
So you're conducting research, so that is speculation.
No. See, where is this position? Understand this. After one regularly performs the processes of hearing and chanting, and after the core of one's heart is cleansed, smaranam, remembering, is recommended. So, if the heart is cleansed, what is it cleansed of?
All the impurities.
Yes, but what are the forms that these impurities take? What are the main categories?
Karma
and jnana, yes. You understand? So, that means speculation on how I can enjoy or how I can, you know, how I can enjoy the facilities or how I can enjoy without the facilities. Right? Either one of those, then that means that's reduced. So why would research here mean speculation? Research here means I read about Krishna, I hear about Krishna, I read Krishna book, I hear Bhagavatam, I read Chaitanya Charitamrita, I learn about Krishna. So I absorb myself in Krishna. That's then performing research into the worship of a particular form of the Lord. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Here, this five stages is mentioned in Smarana. Like we see in the Kirtanam also, similar five stages, similar type of stages can be there because while we advance. Is that what does mean that, like, you know, by perfecting one of this, all other eight included? Because you concentrate on one?
Yes, you can. You can. But it's just, there'll be, yeah. Yeah. But it's just that.
You can realize that.
But yeah, it'll be in the same thing, is that we're not going to be, it's that we're chanting different names. We're always chanting about Krishna. You know, so it's not that we have to give up all the Ganesh and Shiva chanting and then take up Krishna. Maybe others have to do that, but you know what I'm saying. So the chanting is there. The mind may be absorbed in other things, so you have to bring it back. Yeah. But this is just the remembrance aspect that's there. Now, you're remembering because of hearing and chanting. Right? And as you remember, then you're hearing and chanting will improve. Is that... You know, so you don't have to make it direct. You know, it's the pada sevanam, I'm worshipping the lotus feet, but I'm in the kirtan, and so I play mandunga. So where are the feet on the mandunga that I can worship? You know, you don't do that. You know what I'm saying? You don't get so distracted by the secondary. Huh? You know, you just don't want to do that. You know? What comes naturally? That's why we use forms in that the acharyas give. We don't make up our own systems. You know, as we come across in our development, we come across some particular outline or some form that the acharyas use, then we'll integrate it into our system. You don't see us sitting down and trying to classify, okay, what are all the topics of the Bhagavad Gita? We don't do that. We just use Prabhupada's analysis of Gita. It's already there. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, that's what we do. We don't speculate on those things. You know, so the methods that are there, use those. Because if you use them, then you'll see how they're being used. Like Sambandha Abhide and Prayojan, we're starting with that basis when we're studying Gita. But now as we're going and progressing, then we're seeing so many subtle aspects of Sambandha Abhide and Prayojan that the acharyas are talking about, huh? It's just that previously we wouldn't see them if we weren't focusing on the Vastu tribe, right?
You also mentioned that connected with the fact that our endeavor is one, like, single direction. Some devotees, they're like trying to direct their endeavors in different ways, Krishna and something. And
yes, if it's Krishna and something, then yes, you're giving that up, yes. Okay. Mental concentration upon particular pastimes of the Lord in particular circumstance is also called remembrance. Therefore, samadhi, trance, can be possible in five different ways in terms of one's relationship. Specifically, the trance of devotees on the stage of neutrality is called mental concentration. Right? So you're going to get these different aspects are there, but it's not a beginning stage. You see, it's when the heart has become cleansed. When the core of the heart is cleansed. So this idea is that neophytes, and they can follow these advanced processes and all that of remembering the Lord's pastime. It's not going to happen. It has to be a natural thing that's happening. So by hearing and chanting, it'll naturally come. So when that naturally comes, then that's the time for it. But it's not something that, no, it's a sadhana. Does that make sense?
What does it mean, the stage of neutrality?
The stage of neutrality. How do you say? Because it was in connection with rasas, right? So that means the shanta ras. Padasevana. So it appears also that there's differences in the degree of absorption depending on the rasas also. 4. Padasevana. According to one's taste and strength, hearing, chanting, and remembrance may be followed by padasevana. One obtains the perfection of remembering when one constantly thinks of the lotus feet of the Lord. Being intensely attached to thinking of the Lord's lotus feet is called padasevana. When one is particularly adherent to the process of padasevana, this process gradually includes other processes such as seeing the form of the Lord, touching the form of the Lord, circumambulating the form or temple of the Lord, visiting such places as Jagannath Puri, Dwarka, and Mathura to see the Lord's form, and bathing in the Ganges or Jamuna. Bathing in the Ganges and serving a pure Vaishnava are also known as Tadiya Upasanam. This is also padasevana. The word tadiya means in relation with the Lord. Service to the Vaishnav, Tulsi, Ganges, and Jamuna are included in Padasevanam. All these processes of Padasevanam help one advance in spiritual life very quickly. Right? So once one is absorbed that the one is it's important to the Lord, then this Padasevanam will have meaning. Because absorbing oneself and thinking about the lotus feet of the Lord, or thinking about that which is connected with the lotus feet of the Lord, or the tadiya, the devotees and his associates' paraphernalia, then that will have meaning from this process. That's why they're giving in this order. So we can see is that why we say Shravanam Kirtanam is the most important, because if that's there, these other processes will happen. And if it's not there, these other processes won't happen. Right? Because then you need some purification, yes.
But does it mean that after Shravanam and Kirtanam, those processes will go chronologically?
They'll naturally become important, but it's not that you necessarily leave one and focus on the other. It's just that you'll appreciate these things. But there are those devotees that focus on that. Mm-hmm. Like you had devotees here in Mayapur, they go take bath in the Ganga every day or many times a day. Like that, or they do particular service to the Dham, service to Tulsi as part of their sadhana. That would be Padasevanam. You know, for us, it's included in our sadhana. We're respecting, we're doing these things, but we may not make an extra effort for it. If we do, that's the Padasevanam. But generally, Padasevanam will only be there if there's, you know, from hearing and chanting.
Can you say, if you continue that path, those devotees who, for example, choose this,
right,
it has to do with their conditioning as well, that what appeals to them, even though they're getting purified as such, but some like it, some don't.
How is Tulsi part of the conditioning? They just like trees?
Not Tulsi, but some people, they like to take care of Tulsi. Some people, they're not so inclined. Some people like to bathe in the Ganga every day. Some.
But that means in the middle of winter, so it's not that they just like swimming in a river. Because in other words, if you only have a material concept, then the problem is let's say you have material, so you like bathing in a river. Okay, someone who likes bathing in a river, where do they like to bathe in a river?
Clean, nice.
Yeah, okay, so do you always get that along the Ganges here? No, so therefore, on the mundane platform, that won't come.
I was suggesting that it's a mix.
I wouldn't take it that far. I would have a tendency to just say is that by hearing and chanting, these processes awaken and they have an interest in them, so they perform them. Mm-hmm.
So it's natural.
Yeah, because these are direct activities of devotional service. So I wouldn't connect these so much with the conditioning. Mm-hmm. You might find that from a particular piety in their background, they may be more aware of these things as they get purified. But it's not that, it's the conditioning that generates these interests. Right? Devotional service has to be independent, so it can't be dependent on their conditioning, therefore. You know? Like, I know devotees that they have degrees in, you know, horticulture or stuff like that, but I don't see them taking care of Tulsi. And you probably go and check, you know, all the devotees who they're taking care of Tulsi around. They probably, none of them have a degree in that, or, you know, not necessarily even did any thing like that before. Is that
my point was, some devotees, they naturally like to study. And they take the Srimad Bhagavatam as a deeper study.
But the thing is how is it balanced with the rest of their service? You know what I'm saying? If it balances nicely, that's devotional. If it's about they just lock themselves up in a room and study 10 hours a day and don't necessarily chant or come to the programs and don't necessarily deal nicely with devotees, you could say that aspect is conditional. But if they continue it, you know, sincerely, then with time they get purified and then they'll come in and start doing what everybody else does. But if they don't, they, you know, go away and they go away and become a professor at some university like that, then you'll know that, yes, that was conditioning. But they weren't able to use that, engage that conditioning in the Lord's service very, very practically.
Mm-hmm.
Conditioning. Archanam. Right? So in other words, worshiping that which is connected to the Lord very, very quickly helps you advance in serving the Lord. That's Archanam. Okay. That's a big one. After Padasavana comes the process of Archanam, worship of the deity. If one is interested in the process of Archanam, one must positively take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and learn the process from him. There are many books for Archana, especially Narada Pancharatra. In this age, the Pancharatra system is particularly recommended for Archana, deity worship, right? Because, in other words, the Pancharatra is the recommended process in this age for deity worship. There are other processes that are used. It means these processes, they come from the Veda. So having come from the Veda, they're called Agama, right? And so Pancharatra is the recommended for this age. In the previous age, it was the one to use. It was the process of elevation, like in this time it's chanting Hare Krishna. But there's other processes that can be used, but they're not so recommended. Does that make sense? Because they're too technical, they require certain already conditioning that if you, it's one of those, you have it, it works. If you don't have it, it doesn't work. You know, it's like, let's say, playing basketball, right? You know, you're over... If you're over 7 feet tall, works really good. If you're under 5 feet, then don't bother. You know, it's just the way it works. Yeah? Okay. Yeah. Now, I wonder if in the Olympics, then the midgets, they could play basketball with the in the Para-Olympics. Because then they'd be the same size, right? You know, so then it would be on par. Right? So the guys in the wheelchair can go quicker. Yeah.
They're not disabled. They're just short.
They're vertically challenged.
I don't know if that's politically correct. It's a different tough fight.
Different tough fight. But I'm just saying it would probably be. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay, because Narada Pancharatra will put, you know, the focus on worshiping Krishna nicely and everything like that. It's Jnana section, the Kriya Charya, and is it Jnana Kriya Charya? I don't remember the point. But a Pancharatra has these four parts. It has the philosophy of how the deity and the Lord are non-different. Right? Then it will have the daily activities, how your lifestyle you live. Then they'll have the ritualist, the actual activities of the deity worship itself. I can't remember what the fourth one is. Okay. There are two... Okay. There are two systems of Archana. The Bhagavat system and the Pancharatriki system. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no recommendation of Pancharatriki worship because in this Kali Yuga, even without deity worship, everything can be perfectly performed simply through hearing, chanting, and remembering and worship the lotus feet of the Lord. Right? So it's not mentioned. Krishna in the 11th canto will tell how it works, but it's we don't see in the Bhagavatam that it's being used specifically as a system, except for Ambarish Maharaj. I think he's the only one that uses deity worship. Sri Rupa Goswami states, Sri Vishnu Shravane Parikshid Adbhavad Vayasyaki Kirtane Prahladas Marane Tad Angri Bhajane Lakshmi Pritu Pujane Akurastu Abhi Vandane Kapi Patir Dasye Ta Shakyer Juna Saravasvatma Nivedane Balir Adbhut Krishnaptir Esham Param. Parikshit Maharaj attained salvation simply by hearing, and Sukadeva Goswami attained salvation simply by chanting. Prahlad Maharaj attained salvation by remembering the Lord. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, attained perfection by worshipping the Lord's lotus feet. Prithu Maharaj attained salvation by worshipping the deity of the Lord. Akura attained salvation by offering prayers. Hanuman by rendering service. Arjuna by establishing friendship with the Lord. and Bali Maharaj by offering everything to the service of the Lord.
There's no other verse that says that it was
Ambarish. No, I think Ambarish is all nine.
Yeah.
He's all nine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one place, Father Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur described the difference between Bali Maharaj and Ambarish Maharaj surrender. One is Bhav Uttama, one is without that Bhav. Different categories of surrender.
Oh, okay. Yes, because always there's different categories. Because what we will think is just one thing, then we find out it's actually three things. So. All these great devotees served the Lord according to a particular process, but every one of them attained salvation and became eligible to return home back to Godhead. This is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? So the focus is on the Bhagavat. They're not using, the Bhagavatam is not using Pancharatra on its own. In Dwapara Yuga, just by following the Pancharatra, then you could elevate yourself to go back to Godhead. But in this age, then it's the Bhagavat that is the process. As a support, you're using the Pancharatra, that's recommended. Like that. So Prabhupada says like two rails on a train. So you have the Bhagavat and the Pancharatra. Because the Pancharatra is what regulates our lifestyle. The lifestyle we live is Pancharatra. So with that, then we're regulated so that we can therefore be engaged in the Bhagavat. Bhagavat just means hearing, chanting, remembering about the Lord. So, does that make sense? Yeah. It is therefore recommended that initiated devotees follow the principles of Narada Pancharatra by worshipping the deity in the temple, especially for householder devotees who are opulent in material possessions. The path of deity worship is strongly recommended. An opulent householder devotee who does not engage his hard-earned money in the service of the Lord is called a miser. One should not engage paid brahmanas to worship the deity, because otherwise they say, oh yes, we'll do big opulence. No, one should do it oneself. The whole point of the deity worship is that you're involved in it, not that it's just being done. Right? Because otherwise, then we see as Jarasandha, he was worshipping Shaligram. Very nicely and all, but he had paid Brahmins to do that. We don't hear of him doing the worship himself. Does that make sense? So the idea is that one has facility, one worships nicely. So you cook nicely, you make nice facilities, you just do nice things for the Lord. Like that. And so in doing those nice things for the Lord, that's engaging whatever facility you have. That's the idea. Because otherwise the tendency of one will just go on and household life, do your own stuff. But when the deity's there, then you'll consider the deity as part of the whole thing, and then it'll work nicely. Right? Not that someone without facility can't worship the deity, but it just means it will be reduced in what facility and what you can do. So therefore the idea is that those who are opulent can do more, those who are not opulent should do less. Not that the guy who has nothing has, you know, huge sets of deities. Like that. No, it should be that, okay, the one who's rich, he can do that if he wants. You know? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samlabhita Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanoda ki.